Chapter 101. More warnings than one. Florence, Edith, and Mrs. Skewton were together next day, and the carriage was waiting at the door to take them out. For Cleopatra had her galley again now, and Withers, no longer the one, stood upright in a pigeon-breasted jacket and military trousers, behind her wheel-less chair at dinner time and budded no more. The hair of Withers was radiant with pomatum, in these days of down, and he wore kid gloves and smelt of the water of cologne. They were assembled in Cleopatra's room. The serpent of old Nile, not to mention her disrespectfully, was reposing on her sofa, sipping her morning chocolate at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and Flowers the maid was fastening on her youthful cuffs and frills, and performing a kind of private coronation ceremony on her, with a peach-colored velvet bonnet, the artificial roses in which nodded to uncommon advantage, as the palsy trifled with them, like a breeze. "I think I am a little nervous this morning, Flowers," apostrophe said Mrs. Skewton. "My hand quite shakes." "Apostrophe, you were the life of the party last night, ma'am, you know," apostrophe returned Flowers, "apostrophe, and you suffer for it, today, you see." Apostrophe, Edith, who had beckoned Florence to the window, and was looking out, with her back turned on the toilet of her esteemed mother, suddenly withdrew from it, as if it had lightened. "My darling child," apostrophe cried Cleopatra, languidly, "you are not nervous? Don't tell me, my dear Edith, that you, so enviably self-possessed, are beginning to be a martyr to, like your unfortunately constituted mother." "Withers, someone at the door." Apostrophe, "Card, ma'am," apostrophe said Withers, taking it towards Mrs. Dombey. "I am going out," apostrophe she said without looking at it. "My dear love," apostrophe drawled Mrs. Skewton, "how very odd to send that message without seeing the name. Bring it here, Withers." "Dear me, my love, Mr. Carker too. That very sensible person." Apostrophe, "I am going out," apostrophe repeated Edith, in so imperious a tone that Withers, going to the door, imperiously informed the servant who was waiting, "Mrs. Dombey is going out." "Get along with you," apostrophe, and shut it on him. Apostrophe, but the servant came back after a short absence, and whispered to Withers again, who once more, and not very willingly, presented himself before Mrs. Dombey. "If you please, ma'am, Mr. Carker sends his respectful compliments, and begs you would spare him 1 minute, if you could, for business, ma'am, if you please." Apostrophe, "really, my love," apostrophe said Mrs. Skewton in her mildest manner, for her daughter's face was threatening. "If you would allow me to offer a word, I should recommend apostrophe, show him this way," apostrophe said Edith. As Withers disappeared to execute the command, she added, frowning on her mother, "as he comes at your recommendation, let him come to your room." Apostrophe, "may I, shall I go away?" Apostrophe, apostrophe asked Florence, hurriedly. Edith nodded yes, but on her way to the door Florence met the visitor coming in. With the same disagreeable mixture of familiarity and forbearance with which he had first addressed her, he addressed her now in his softest manner, hoped she was quite well, needed not to ask, with such looks to anticipate the answer, had scarcely had the honor to know her last night, she was so greatly changed, and held the door open for her to pass out. With a secret sense of power in her shrinking from him, that all the deference and politeness of his manner could not quite conceal. He then bowed himself for a moment over Mrs. Skewton's condescending hand, and lastly bowed to Edith. Coldly returning his salute without looking at him, and neither seating herself nor inviting him to be seated, she waited for him to speak. Entrenched in her pride and power, and with all the obduracy of her spirit summoned about her, still her old conviction, that she and her mother had been known by this man in their worst colors, from their first acquaintance, that every degradation she had suffered in her own eyes was as plain to him as to herself, that he read her life, as though it were a vile book, and fluttered the leaves before her in slight looks and tones of voice which no one else could detect, weakened and undermined her. proudly as she opposed herself to him, with her commanding face exacting his humility, her disdainful lip repulsing him, her bosom angry at his intrusion, and the dark lashes of her eyes sullenly veiling their light, that no ray of it might shine upon him, and submissively as he stood before her, with an entreating injured manner, but with complete submission to her will, she knew, in her own soul, that the cases were reversed, and that the triumph and superiority were his, and that he knew it full well. "I have presumed," said Mr. Carker, "to solicit an interview, and I have ventured to describe it as being one of business, because perhaps you are charged by Mr. Dombey with some message of reproof, that you possess Mr. Dombey's confidence in such an unusual degree, sir, that you would scarcely surprise me, if that were your business. I have no message to the lady who sheds a luster upon his name," said Mr. Carker. "But I entreat that lady, on my own behalf, to be just to a very humble claimant for justice at her hands, a mere dependent of Mr. Dombey's, which is a position of humility, and to reflect upon my perfect helplessness last night, and the impossibility of my avoiding the share that was forced upon me in a very painful occasion. My dearest Edith," hinted Cleopatra in a low voice, as she held her eyeglass aside, "really very charming of Mr. What's-his-name, and full of heart. For I do," said Mr. Carker, appealing to Mrs. Skewton with a look of grateful deference, "I do venture to call it a painful occasion, though merely because it was so to me, who had the misfortune to be present. So slight a difference, as between the principles between those who love each other with disinterested devotion, and would make any sacrifice of self in such a cause, is nothing. As Mrs. Skewton herself expressed, with so much truth and feeling last night, it is nothing." Edith could not look at him, but she said after a few moments, "A near business, sir," "Edith, my pet," said Mrs. Skewton, "all this time Mr. Carker is standing. My dear Mr. Carker, take a seat, I beg." He offered no reply to the mother, but fixed his eyes on the proud daughter, as though he would only be bitten by her, and was resolved to be bitten by her. Edith, in spite of herself, sat down, and slightly motioned with her hand to him to be seated too. No action could be colder, haughtier, more insolent in its air of supremacy and disrespect, but she had struggled against even that concession ineffectually, and it was wrested from her. That was enough. Mr. Carker sat down. "May I be allowed, madam," said Carker, turning his white teeth on Mrs. Skewton like a light, "a lady of your excellent sense and quick feeling will give me credit, for good reason, I am sure, to address what I have to say to Mrs. Dombey, and to leave her to impart it to you, who are her best and dearest friend next to Mr. Dombey?" Mrs. Skewton would have retired, but Edith stopped her. Edith would have stopped him too, and indignantly ordered him to speak openly, or not at all, but that he said, in a low voice, "Miss Florence, the young lady who has just left the room," Edith suffered him to proceed. She looked at him now, as he bent forward, to be nearer, with the utmost show of delicacy and respect, and with his teeth persuasively arrayed, in a self-depreciating smile, she felt as if she could have struck him dead. "Miss Florence's position," he began, "has been an unfortunate one. I have a difficulty in alluding to it to you, whose attachment to her father is naturally watchful and jealous of every word that applies to him." Always distinct and soft in speech, no language could describe the extent of his distinctness and softness when he said these words, or came to any others of a similar import. But, as one who is devoted to Mr. Dombey in his different way, and whose life is passed in admiration of Mr. Dombey's character, may I say, without offense to your tenderness as a wife, that Miss Florence has unhappily been neglected by her father. May I say by her father? Edith replied, "I know it." You know it? " said Mr. Carker, with a great appearance of relief. "It removes a mountain from my breast. May I hope you know how the neglect originated? In what amiable phase of Mr. Dombey's pride character I mean? You may pass that by, sir," she returned, "and come the sooner to the end of what you have to say." "Indeed, I am sensible, madam," replied Carker. "Trust me, I am deeply sensible that Mr. Dombey can require no justification in anything to you. But kindly judge of my breast by your own, and you will forgive my interest in him, if in its excess, it goes at all astray." What a stab to her proud heart, to sit there, face to face with him, and have him tendering her false oath at the altar again and again for her acceptance, and pressing it upon her like the dregs of a sickening cup she could not own her loathing of or turn away from. How shame, remorse, and passion raged within her, when, upright and majestic in her beauty before him, she knew that in her spirit she was down at his feet. "Miss Florence," said Carker, "left to the care, if one may call it care, of servants and mercenary people, in every way her inferiors, necessarily wanted some guide and compass in her younger days, and, naturally, for want of them, has been indiscreet, and has in some degree forgotten her station. There was some folly about one Walter, a common lad, who is fortunately dead now, and some very undesirable association, I regret to say, with certain coasting sailors, of anything but good repute, and a runaway old bankrupt. I have heard the circumstances, sir," said Edith, flashing her disdainful glance upon him, "and I know that you pervert them. You may not know it. I hope so. " said Mr. Carker, "I believe that nobody knows them so well as one. Your generous and ardent nature, madam, the same nature which is so nobly imperative in vindication of your beloved and honored husband, and which has blessed him as even his merits deserve, I must respect, defer to, bow before. But, as regards the circumstances, which is indeed the business I presume to solicit your attention to, I can have no doubt, since, in the execution of my trust as Mr. Dombey's confidential, I presume to say friend, I have fully ascertained them. In my execution of that trust, in my deep concern, which you can so well understand, for everything relating to him, intensified, if you will, for I fear I labor under your displeasure, by the lower motive of desire to prove my diligence, and make myself the more acceptable, I have long pursued these circumstances by myself and trustworthy instruments, and have innumerable, and most minute proofs." She raised her eyes no higher than his mouth, but she saw the means of mischief vaunted in every tooth it contained. "Pardon me, madam," he continued, "if in my perplexity, I presume to take counsel with you, and to consult your pleasure. I think I have observed that you are greatly interested in Miss Florence?" What was there in her, he had not observed, and did not know? Humbled and yet maddened by the thought, in every new presentment of it, however faint, she pressed her teeth upon her quivering lip, to force composure on it, and distantly inclined her head in reply. "This interest, madam, so touching an evidence of everything associated with Mr. Dombey, being dear to you, induces me to pause, before I make him acquainted with these circumstances, which, as yet, he does not know. It so shakes me, if I may make the confession, in my allegiance, that on the intimation of the least desire to that effect from you, I would suppress them." Edith raised her head quickly, and starting back, bent her dark glance upon him. He met it with his blandest and most deferential smile, and went on. "You say that as I describe them, they are perverted. I fear not. But let us assume that they are. The uneasiness I have for some time felt on the subject arises in this, that the mere circumstance of such association often repeated, on the part of Miss Florence, however innocently and confidingly, would be conclusive with Mr. Dombey, already predisposed against her, and would lead him to take some step. I know he has occasionally contemplated it, of separation and alienation of her from his home. Madam, bear with me, and remember my intercourse with Mr. Dombey, and my knowledge of him, and my reverence for him, almost from childhood. When I say that, if he has a fault, it is a lofty stubbornness, rooted in that noble pride and sense of power which belong to him, and which we must all defer to, which is not assailable like the obstinacy of other characters, and which grows upon itself from day to day, and year to year. She bent her glance upon him still, but, look as steadfast as she would, her haughty nostrils dilated, and her breath came somewhat deeper, and her lip would slightly curl, as he described that in his patron to which they must all bow down. He saw it, and though his expression did not change, she knew he saw it. Even so slight an incident as last night's apostrophe, he said, if I might refer to it once more, would serve to illustrate my meaning better than a greater one. Dombey and Son know neither time, nor place, nor season, but bear them all down. But I rejoice in its occurrence, for it has opened the way for me to approach Mrs. Dombey with this subject today, even if it has entailed upon me the penalty of her temporary displeasure. Madam, in the midst of my uneasiness and apprehension on this subject, I was summoned by Mr. Dombey to Leamington. There I saw you. There I could not help knowing what relation you would shortly occupy towards him to his enduring happiness and yours. There I resolved to await the time of your establishment at home here, and to do as I have now done. I have, at heart, no fear that I shall be wanting in my duty to Mr. Dombey, if I bury what I know in your breast, for where there is but one heart and mind between two persons as in such a marriage one almost represents the other. I can acquit my conscience therefore, almost equally, by confidence, on such a theme, in you or him. For the reasons I have mentioned I would select you. May I aspire to the distinction of believing that my confidence is accepted, and that I am relieved from my responsibility? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he long remembered the look she gave him who could see it, and forget it, and the struggle that ensued within her. At last she said, I accept it, sir, you will please to consider this matter at an end, and that it goes no farther. Apostrophe, he bowed low, and rose. She rose too, and he took leave with all humility. But Withers, meeting him on the stairs, stood amazed at the beauty of his teeth, and at his brilliant smile, and as he rode away upon his white-legged horse, the people took him for a dentist, such was the dazzling show he made. The people took her, when she rode out in her carriage presently, for a great lady, as happy as she was rich and fine. But they had not seen her, just before, in her own room with Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.